When I first read the story about Guru Mai's dream, I understood it a little bit differently than the way that I do now. As we recall, Guru Mai asked the beings in her dreams over and over again how she could truly convey the experience of living in joy to the people of this earth. I was very grateful for her persistence because I was eager to hear the answer too. The great being said to her, "That is not easy to do. We all had to travel a long, long distance to reach the abode of joy. And when you get there, that you discover it is not a place at all, but a state." I originally thought that the great being was suggesting that the long, long distance that I had to travel to reach the abode of joy was only by death when I shed my body and rejoined the infinite self. But over the past couple of years, I have discovered that there is another route that leads me to the state of joy, and that is when I journey into the depths of my heart. When I bring my awareness to my heart, I experience peace, compassion, love, enthusiasm, creativity, courage, kindness, gentleness, and connection. This is my abode of joy. My direct experience of the infinite, the ever-present spark, the divine perfection that lives within my heart. Over the past few months, it has been my spiritual practice to pay attention to whether or not I believe I have witnessed and experienced joy. One afternoon, I was watching the Ellen Show, and she had highlighted a video that had gone viral with millions of viewers. It was of two young men, Sam and Chris, who were happily dancing while they were working at Starbucks. I thought, oh, well, that's pretty cute. I'm glad they're having fun, but I don't understand why it's gone viral. Well, when the clip was over, Ellen introduced the Starbucks dancers. Sam, who was 17 years old and autistic, wore a huge smile on his face as he energetically rocked back and forth in his seat. Sitting beside him was Chris, who is a manager for Starbucks. The two had met at a camp where Chris had learned that it was one of Sam's dreams to be a barista. Chris, after learning Sam's dream, invited Sam to come to his Starbucks store. It was at this time that Ellen interjected and shared with her viewers that someone had once told Sam that he would never be employable. Sam said, "When I went to the store, I thought I was just going for a formal interview. But when I got there, Chris said, 'Sam, you've got the job.' Well, the audience clapped and cheered, and Sam continued on to say, 'And when Chris told me that I got the job, that moment changed my life. My whole world changed. Spontaneously, my hands covered my mouth, and my heart leaped within my chest as tears started to stream down my face. As I tried to compose myself so I could hear the rest of the interview, we learned that ever since Sam was 4 years old, he wanted to travel to Japan. Well, with Ellen being Ellen, she pulled out a big poster board announcing her plans to send Sam and his family to Japan. The crowd exploded. Sam hollered with glee as his hand spontaneously covered his mouth as he continued to rock back and forth in his chair. Well, heck, after that, I was a complete sobbing mess, and I believe in that moment, I witnessed joy. When I first began my practice of cultivating joy, I wanted to understand the true meaning of joy and where it comes from. In the book, 8 Mindful Steps of Happiness, the author tells us that the Buddha explained that as one matures spiritually, one comes to understand that there is more to life than the pleasure through the physical senses, and that worldly happiness goes beyond sense indulgence. Finding joy through the senses doesn't work because the pleasure disappears almost immediately and may even leave you feeling wretched, empty, and maybe remorseful. We may experience the joys with things such as reading, watching a good movie, or other forms of mental stimulation and entertainment. We also may experience the wholesome joys of the world, such as helping people and being of service. He continued on to teach, but stable joy doesn't depend on conditions, and that joy arises in hopeful anticipation of happiness. Wouldn't it be great if we could live in the state of stable joy all the time? And I asked myself, when am I not feeling that state of joy, and why is that? My heart, which is the sacred home of the divine, my abode of joy, is right here. It is beating, alive, and active, and can sometimes feel like it's miles away. And with that awareness, I stepped into action. For many months now, I have been walking on the path to cultivate joy with every moment of my day. Sometimes seems daunting, I know, but I know that it's possible because the sages and mystics have told us so. The first thing that I needed to do was to renounce my lack of faith and remember that I have the ability and will receive the grace that I need to reclaim this birthright. I have found that cultivating the state of joy is like cultivating a luscious and fruitful garden that I can go to again and again to gather its fruits. And the first step in growing a garden is finding a land and claiming it. This is the land. This is my life. I'm responsible for whether or not I am living in the state of joy this very moment. The Buddha said, my joy does not depend on conditions that I cling on to, like whether or not my daughter cleans her room, if the stock market has regained its losses, if I've lost 5 pounds, or if a certain someone loses his run for the White House. My joy does not depend on attachments that I may create for myself, like my socioeconomic status, fruits of my labor, or worldly appraises for my accomplishments. It does, however, depend on my efforts to be awake and to remain present. Our second task in our garden is to clean the soil and to prepare the foundation in which we can cultivate our joy. We have to take out the debris that gets in the way of experiencing joy. We need to compassionately remove the weeds of self-doubt, shame, worry, judgment, and feeling of separation that can lead us to feel unworthy, inadequate, or small. We need to gently dig out the stones of anger and resentment that can deafen our ears and harden our hearts. And in every garden, there are those weeds that are invasive and stubborn and hard to get rid of, just like the fear is in our lives. As we do the internal work, it is important to ask ourselves, can I live a life where my own debris can be let go? And what would that look like? Can I, Carolyn Stern, let go of the fear of not having enough money? Can I let go of the shame that I felt as a child as two kids from across the street threw pine cones at me for no apparent reason? Can I let go of the anger I feel towards a family member who had been verbally abusive? I do want to let this debris go, but before I do, I need to look at each negative situation and to see what positive life lesson it has to offer me. And when I have learned this lesson, and when I have received the gift, I can lovingly remove the debris of fear, shame, and anger with gratitude. I believe that the biggest obstacle that blocks joy from our lives is the incessant chatter of our minds. The mind's job is to have thoughts, comprehend, contemplate, discern, judge, and create. Our mind is our friend and one of our most powerful tools we are gifted as human beings. But when it is unsettled, indecisive, restless, and uncontrolled, it can wreak havoc on our lives. Did you know that the mind generates over 60,000 thoughts per day? That's more than 40 thoughts per minute that can get in the way between us and the world every day. if we are not present enough to witness the thoughts and the direction in which our mind are leading us to, we have the potential to be led down a rabbit hole of delusion. Pema Chodron teaches that there are numerous ways to work with the mind, and one of the most effective ways is through the tool of sitting meditation. Sitting meditation opens us up to each and every moment in our life. In meditation, our thoughts and emotions can become like clouds that float in and then pass away. Good and comfortable, pleasing and difficult and painful, all of this comes and goes. So the essence of meditation is in training in something that is quite radical and definitely not the habitual pattern for our species, and that is to stay with ourselves no matter what is happening, without putting labels of good or bad, right or wrong, pure or impure, on top of our experience. Meditation gives us the opportunity to have an open and compassionate attention to whatever is going on. The meditative space is like the big sky, spacious and vast enough to accommodate anything that arises. Along with meditation, practicing grateful living is a powerful tool that we can use to cultivate joy. Practicing grateful living asks us to be aware and to notice all that is already present and abundant in our lives. Brother David Steindl-Rast, a monk and interfaith scholar, gave a TED Talk in 2013 and explained that gratefulness happens when something that is valuable that has been given to us and that has been given to us freely. Grateful living is becoming aware that every moment is a given moment. It is a present. You haven't earned it. You haven't brought it about in any way, and there is no assurances that another one will be given to you. We can be grateful in every given moment, for we are given the opportunity to choose how we are going to respond to life situations, even if the moment is a difficult one. We can rise to the occasion and rise to the opportunity that is given to us. We can rise to it by learning something from it. We miss so many opportunities because we don't stop in our busy lives. He encourages us to pause, look around, and to use our senses and enjoy the moment that has been given. The opportunity in the moment invites us to do something. That is what life has to offer in the present moment. How are you going to choose to respond to each moment and opportunity that you are given? When we choose to be grateful, we are not fearful. When we choose not to be fearful, we are not violent. And when we are grateful, we act out of a sense of enough, and we are willing to share. A grateful world is a world of joyful people. The practice of mindfulness is another wonderful tool to help us cultivate joy. It quiets the minds and helps us to maintain awareness in the present moment. Thich Nhat Hanh teaches that mindfulness is the energy of being aware and awake in the present moment. It is a continuous practice of touching life deeply in every moment of daily life. We can bring our bodies and minds into harmony while we wash the dishes, drive our cars, or take our morning shower. It leads to concentration, which also brings us insight, and insight has the power to liberate and set you free. For me, I understand mindfulness as a way to experience the peace and the depth of another reality, not as an escape from this one, but as a doorway to rediscovering the divine. When my mind is running to and fro, it will overlook the subtle ways that God is trying to talk to me. During the summertime, I usually like to have my breakfast outside in the garden, and I love to watch the creatures scurry and flutter about, especially the birds and the bees. I search for how the divine spark of God is expressing itself through them as they go about their busyness. And if I am not mindful, I will see a bird and go, oh, well, there's a bird. But I'm really not seeing that bird at all. I'm only seeing the mind's quick version of what it perceives the bird to be. But when my mind is settled in the present moment, I see much more. I pause and become curious about the bird. I listen closely to its beautiful song, and I watch how its beak opens and shuts very quickly as it sings. I notice how different its song is from the other birds. I feel happiness when I watch it feed its young. Its playful energy is contagious, and I imagine what it would be like to be able to fly. Within a moment, I become aware that this bird experiences freedom in a way that I do not. And I realize that this bird has something to say. It asks, do you sing your divine song? Do you allow yourself to play as hard as you work? And what stories do you tell yourself that create the illusion of imprisonment? This concentration brought me great insight as the opportunity in that moment to see the barriers that I had created, which blocked my heart's true nature and fullest expression of joy. Reconnecting with my heart gives me the opportunity to cultivate love, passion, and compassion, love, patience, and compassion for myself. And before heading back inside, I offer gratitude to this little songbird, for she helped me uncover and rediscover my abode of joy and guided me closer to liberation. When our spiritual practice is cultivating joy, we allow ourselves the opportunity to remove the self-inflicted veils that cover our true nature. And as we rediscover the abode of joy, we will uncover our true nature and to want and to have the desire to share that joy with others. With meditation, mindfulness, and grateful living, our souls can be touched, and we are welcoming the opportunity to realize the potential of stable and unshakable joy. Pursuing and cultivating joy in our lives is an unselfish act, for when we seize the opportunity to rediscover our hearts time and time again, we can offer its fruits of love, patience, compassion, presence, openness, and loving kindness to one another. We can be courageous, and we can take the risk of sharing our hearts to fall in love over and over again. We all have the potential to be the great beings who walk this earth, to embody joy, and to radiate its bliss. Thank you.